Track 7, London Landmarks. I suspect that when I mentioned Amazing Gates earlier on, you thought you had misheard, or that I had misread the script. But no, here is Mark Rylance to talk about the gates to the Globe Theatre.
Maybe it's because I'm a Londoner that I love London so.
My name is Mark Rylance. I'm an actor. Have been an actor since, 1980, I suppose. And for 10 years, I was artistic director of Shakespeare's Globe Theatre. The Globe Theatre stands on the south bank of the Thames, near Southwark Bridge. The riverside here is very old and a very emotional place for me. I first worked at the Globe before its reconstruction, doing a very small production of Othello in the Bear Gardens, which was where Sam Wanamaker and his friends had set up their base to build the Globe. Then around 1991, while building work was being carried out, I did a production of The Tempest down in the foundations, the concrete foundations of the site. And in 1995, 2 years before the Globe officially opened, I became artistic director, because Sam Wanamaker had very sadly died in 1993. I used to stand here late at night looking out at St. Paul's, which you can see across the river, beautifully illuminated, and then later the Millennium Bridge, which I prefer to call the Wobble Bridge, as it had such a lovely swing when it first opened and was rather enjoyable to walk across. It's still very enjoyable to walk across, I have to say. There's a sense of time, I suppose, the presence of other generations, especially those from Shakespeare's lifetime, here when you stand and look at the Globe and at the river. Now, facing the river, at the front of the Globe, are the Globe gates. They separate the walled yard of the theatre from the sidewalk along the riverside where people are walking. Before they were put up in 1997, it was just a concrete wall protecting the building site. 9 steps lead from the road up to the gates. If there's no play being performed, the gates are pinned open during the day. They're made of slender, vertical, wrought iron stems that weave gently as they go up. At the top, there are 3 curved tiers, so that the gates are tallest in the center, reaching about 5 meters where they meet. And they're about the same width. All over the gates, there are rows of small cast iron figures depicting plants, creatures, and strange objects, all from Shakespeare's plays. Each is a bit larger than a hand, with the fingers spread. There are over 100 different figures made by 130 blacksmiths from all over Europe, America, and even further afield. These gates were initiated by Sam Wanamaker as a fundraising and consciousness-raising project, and they were designed by Richard Quinnell, MBE. It was part of the architect Theo Crosby's vision that the Globe should be a place of traditional craft work, timber framework, lime plaster, thatch work. It's the first building thatched in London since the Great Fire. And lastly, blacksmithery. Well, maybe not lastly, because the craft of acting was to be rediscovered too. And that all these crafts, this is what Theo Crosby felt, should inspire the artists in their craft, and hopefully the audiences as well. The wonderful, curious figures include mermaids, crows, octopuses and peacocks, sheep, an owl, a stick of corn, rushes, butterflies, and a dragon. The 3 lowest rows are within touching range, one about hip height, one around the shoulder, and one just above the head. When the gates are pinned open, you'll be able to feel the figures that are usually inside. With your back to the river, turn to the gate on your right. Going from left to right, you'll find at hip height a kingfisher holding a fish in its beak, an abstract ox with long tapering horns, a hare, powerful legs bent as if ready to leap, 2 entwined vipers with forked tongues, and finally a chameleon clinging to a branch. You wouldn't imagine all these things were in the world, much less in Shakespeare plays, but they must be in a Shakespeare play somewhere. Above that, going left to right again, there's a leek, a feather, quill and ink pot, a frog with spots on its back, an owl, and primroses with five heart-shaped petals. And above that, a fig hanging on a branch, a shark, foxgloves, a big rough rat holding a tiny book, and the mask of an ape's face. The ape's eyes are bulging, and its mouth is open as if in fear. Stranger, it has no teeth or tongue. Its mouth is a smooth concave. The thing that I particularly love with Shakespeare is that he gives soul to the whole of nature. He ensouls the world. In Cymbeline, to take one example, when the flame of a candle sees the beautiful Imogen's sleeping face, even it falls in love with her. And I quote, "The flame of the taper bows toward her and would underpeep her lids to see the enclosed lights." Isn't that beautiful? Plants and rocks are given a liveliness of consciousness. He observes nature so lovingly. That's one of his gifts to us, I suppose. Now, I can't describe every figure, but let me see, I'll pick out a few more. Still with the gates pinned open, on the gate to your left, you'll find a disc-shaped one. It's in the lowest row, three along from either side. Shaped like a large coin, it's a two-dimensional picture of a man's stockinged legs and a spaniel. The spaniel's head and paws pop out. It's stepping out of the picture. Along the edge of the coin, it reads, "Troilus, faithful companion," after Petruchio's spaniel in The Taming of the Shrew. Immediately to the left of that, there's a mortar and pestle belonging to the apothecary in Romeo and Juliet. You may remember in the story that when Romeo believes that Juliet has died, he wants to kill himself and he goes to this apothecary to get the potion. The brim and base of the mortar fan out and the curled letters RX are raised on its surface from the Latin symbol for prescription. Just beneath the brim, there's a lightly rendered Star of David. The figure was made in memory of someone called Ephraim Boddo. If the gates are closed and you're outside, you'll find a hawk. It's in the lowest row of the right-hand gate, just beside the point where the two gates meet. The hawk is in profile, looking back over its shoulder. It's perched on the blade of a hand saw, and it relates to Hamlet's words, "I am but mad north-northwest. When the wind is southerly, I know a hawk from a hand saw." One row up and one figure to the left is a Japanese no mask made by a blacksmith in Japan. It has a smooth, serene expression with the suggestion of a smile. And right at the top of the gates, there are two masks of comedy on the left and tragedy on the right. The masks have angular, stylized faces like line drawings with thin lips and pointed noses. Their expressions are surprisingly subtle. A smile plays on comedy's lips, whereas tragedy's brow is slightly furrowed, corners of the mouth turned down. I remember the day the gates were made. That heavy frame went up first, and then blacksmiths gathered all along the road by the river. They were hammering out little roses, which were meant to go where the iron stems cross. There are spherical bolts there now, but once a year there are roses in the gates. Every 23rd of April, the day we believe that Shakespeare was born, I've led walks of people. 250 walk from Poets' Corner in Westminster Abbey, and 250 from Shoreditch, the site of the original Globe Theatre. They carry white and red roses, and when they arrive here, they weave them between the figures. And so at the end of the day, the gates are full of these 500 white and red roses, signifying the marriage of the House of Lancaster and York, and many other things, actually. At either side of the gates, there are two stone and brick posts. I have always wanted to put fires on top, maybe real gas fires. I like the idea of people flooding out through these gates after hearing a Shakespeare play and going back into the world through the pillars of fire and re-entering their lives, hopefully inspired by what they've heard inside the Globe Theatre.
Thank you, Mark. When I'm next on the South Bank in London, I'll look out for these.